Welcome, this is William Evans, and you're listening to Shifting Gears. Our guest today is Michelle Zanotti, a mother and a teacher, in the studio with us at KDNK. Welcome, Michelle.
Thank you for having me.
Give me a little background about why your mother was frightened of water.
My grandmother, yes.
Your grandmother.
I just had a conversation with my dad about it last week, and my grandmother was a very quiet woman, and she unfortunately had four really boisterous children, and it was hard for her to be a mom, my dad decided. It was a lot of energy, and they grew up in the foothills in Golden when there wasn't much there, a lot of ditches and Clear Creek. And my grandmother was just simply afraid that while she was doing laundry and tending to the baby, the other kids would drown. And so she created a lot of fear in them to stay away from the ditches, which my father said they, of course, rebelled against, and they were wading in the ditches all the time, swimming in the creek in the spring, but he still has a huge fear of water left over.
And he dealt with it with you by?
By introducing me to water right away.
When you were how old?
I feel like I was five. That memory is five of just being like, what is my dad doing? Just he took my arm and my leg and threw me in the swimming pool. And I was amazed. I remember coming up and looking at him like, wah. And then I swam over to the side. And he was like, that's why I did that. It worked.
And can you say a little more about your relationship with water?
Sure. I grew up as a competitive swimmer. So I was in the water up to 5 hours a day training for 15 years. It was really my life. And it was hard to be that disciplined, but I was.
And this was an Arvada swim team?
Uh-huh, yep. And let's see. So my relationship to water then was discipline. And it eventually, when I was looking for colleges, I decided not to go to the big colleges and not be an athlete in college. And that was a good decision, which changed my relationship with water so that I could enjoy. I didn't have to train in the water anymore. Mm-hmm. I could sense the water, be in the water. Yeah.
And you're pretty sensitive.
Yeah, I am.
So are you comfortable telling us the dimension of information you get in the water? Or tell us what happens to you when you're near water or in water?
Oh, wow, that's interesting. So what comes to mind is two things. One is the threshold between air and water I'm very aware of. And it takes both when water was where I trained and now when water is a river to enjoy. Submerging is work. Changing medium it requires will.
It's a big deal.
Yeah, it is. Whether it's not only the temperature change, right, but you're entering a new world. Water is a new world. So that comes to mind. And then once in water, there's just a, I don't know if I have good words, Will. It's like a knowing and a comfort and a oneness when you're in the water. And I feel like wisdom can just arrive when you're in wild water, truly wild water.
And by wild water, do you mean a rapid
or an ocean? No, I mean like not too affected by man, by man's doings.
More pristine.
Yeah, pristine is the word. Yeah, pristine water.
Can you give us an example?
Of pristine water?
No, the kind of experience you have in pristine water.
I feel like everybody has the same kind of experience, is just an awakeness, an aliveness. I don't know if I have the adjectives for it. A a wisdom, an awareness, and a right, like something is right. Overall, something is right.
About just being in pristine water.
About that whole setting and experience.
Returning to the water.
Is it a return? It's a remembering.
Well, you developed in water.
Yeah, we did. And I always have this feeling like we could breathe water again. I totally have that belief.
How's it going?
I haven't tried. Only in my dreams do I succeed.
good idea. I've had poor luck at that.
Yeah, it could be detrimental.
And then you took an interesting trip to Alaska. Tell us about how that came about.
Yes, well, I would say that in college, I always wanted to do something in community and out in the woods. That was my ambition for my summer jobs. So be with people and out in a beautiful place. And I did that for many years at a guest ranch. And then I wanted something different. And I had a friend direct me to a job in Alaska where you would fly to different villages in the bush and teach the natives how to swim in their water. So it sounded like an adventure. Those are the adventure years.
And which village did you go to first?
The first village was Nanwalik, and it's also known as English Bay to outsiders, and it's on the Prince William Sound. Very cold. It was very cold swimming.
And tell us in detail about how that went and what it was like.
It was a dream, Will. You know, we landed in our plane. We had our provisions for the next 8 weeks with us. They came from village to village with us. And we landed in love. Like the whole village of children arrived on this tiny strip of grass. They had a shed about the size of this room. You know,
so you landed on wheels?
We landed on wheels, yes, yes.
And how big is the village?
The village was probably 200 people.
And how many children?
In the first village, I remember well, it was about 80 children.
120 adults and 80 children.
Gosh, does that sound right? Maybe there were 300 people there.
Okay. Yeah. And you said they, including yourself, so who all was with you?
I had a partner. So we traveled in twos to the villages. Yes. Her name was Jody. I just met her in the training, and we were...
So you got paired up together and sent to Alaska.
Yes.
And you got a plane and a pilot.
Yes.
Same pilot all the way through?
No. Just someone coming out of Homer, Alaska who dotted us around, yeah.
Do you remember who it was?
No, but they're wild.
Yes, they are.
The pilots are wild there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we could trade bush pilot stories later, but tell me about how you started.
We started by the children just taking us in and walking us directly to where we would swim. They knew why we were there.
And they knew what you wanted to do and where they wanted to go.
And we were very welcomed. We were wanted, which is a beauty and a grace, yes. So they walked us up this dirt path all probably 2 or 3 miles right from the get-go to go see the lake we would be swimming in.
You were swimming in a lake, not the ocean.
No, not the ocean. Nope. Thank goodness. That would be very cold. A lake and a stream. There were two places that we taught swimming there. Beautiful, deep swimming hole in a river and then also in a lake as well.
And so you were there how many days?
Each village was a 2-week journey.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, it was like going back. It was going to another world because they were so sweet and kind and trusting and loving. And I don't think I've ever been welcomed like that anywhere in my culture. It felt like a dream. I remember my partner, Jody, and I just kept looking at each other like, is this real? All these amazing, magical children just holding our hand and taking us, you know, up in the alpine. It was just amazing.
Well, and they knew you were bringing a life-sustaining gift.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Because a lot of people drowned in Alaska, mm-hmm. natives who never learned to swim. I'm sure you know that.
Yes. Yes, that's why we're invited in.
Yeah.
Yes.
So tell us some stories from that first village.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is the first experience I had in Nanwalik, where at a community gathering, I saw a baby be passed around from arms to arms to arms to arms. And I was shocked. And I thought, what a beautiful freedom for that mother to trust this whole community. And what a beautiful gift for that child to be held by so many people.
Every mother in the village is her mother.
Yes. Every mother, grandmother, father, grandfather, child is holding that baby. Yeah. So that was remarkable to me.
This is William Evans. We're shifting gears. Our guest today is Michelle Zanotti, and she's talking about her trip to teach children in Alaska to swim.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us another experience in that first village. That's probably almost the most memorable, isn't it?
It was big for me. It was big. And what else sounds? Well, this first village is when we discovered that not only were children needing to learn how to swim, but they were also needing to be convinced that there wasn't a monster in the water. Right. Because adults who cannot swim create a fear for their child to keep them safe. And so the fear was, I don't remember the word they used for their monster, but it took us some time to understand what they were talking about. They had their own language and their own word for this monster. And we would get in the water and the children would be like, no, 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 no. Like, you know, somebody lives in there. Somebody lives in there. Or they live in that spot. Or so we heard their legend, right? Whatever legend their elders created to keep them safe. And we unraveled it with the children.
Tell me what you mean by unraveling.
Unraveled it, meaning we demolished that bad thing in the water with our words. We let them know that it was safe. We showed them it was safe. And I still to this day wonder if that was a wise idea or not, Will. Because knowing that we were going to be there only 2 weeks, are we truly giving the children the gift of knowing how to swim and safety in wild, pristine waters? And then we're leaving, right? And so, yeah, I still wonder if that was a wise idea. But it seems to have worked. Like, the people come back every summer and continue to teach.
This is an ongoing program.
Mm-hmm. Or it was then. I haven't touched base with it, but it was.
How long did you stay in touch with the people who organized the program? Mm.
Probably about 2 or 3 years, I would guess. Yeah. It was their baby. It was their favorite program that they ran.
Alaska.
Uh-huh. Or the Bush program.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. They cared about it a lot. And so we killed their monster in the water. And then we had to convince them that it wasn't cold, even though it was so cold. And then we had the joy of just like building a campfire and being in the water, being at the fire, being in the water, being at the fire, and enjoying stories and just the culture. Playing games and always in the villages we were always corrected whenever we brought games that had a winner or a loser or someone got left out. If they didn't hit the ball after 3 kicks, then they were out. And the children would immediately just stop and look at us. Well, what about him?
Wow.
And we would be like, what about him? He's out.
So they were alive in non-contest play.
Oh, absolutely. Contest play was shocking to them.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. There was truly a memorable stillness when we casually announced, you know, the rule that, oh, then they're out. And they go stand over here and people would be like, what? And they would immediately rework it.
And how do you see that now?
Oh, brilliant. I was shocked by it then, too. I was like, because I was raised solely in this contest behavior. And to have that pause was like, what's the problem? And then I realized, because they were so flexible in having a new game come in and reworking it to their belief system of, no, nobody gets left out. Everybody's included. We're all having fun. Then they just easily swept me off my feet in believing that we all should be playing games where we're all included and we find fun passageways for everybody to stay in a game.
The survival and sustainability of the village depends on that. Everybody's mm-hmm. critical.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Everybody cooperates.
Right.
What a gift you got.
Yes, to glimpse that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and for them to be children and clear and speak their truth right in front of you and say, hey.
Right, immediately.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's not the way we do it here.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And so look, like just talking to you, realizing right now, look how many people are out in our society, right? They're out and then we don't worry about them because we're playing the game. And the approach of Nanwalik, this village, was, no, everybody has to be playing the game together. Mm-hmm. What a rich society we would have if everybody was in the game.
We might even become sustainable.
We might.
And some of the dissonance and violence might go away.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because everybody there knew they were loved.
Mm-hmm.
From the time they first were passed from mother to mother
mm-hmm.
at the shore while everybody was watching the swimming. And were the adults there while you were with the kids most of the time?
They really weren't. They would help with, like, you know, we would do overnight camping, so they would help us organize food and stuff. They were supportive, but they weren't present. Mm-mm.
So once they learned you were okay, they left you alone?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, gosh, all the mosquito bites are coming to mind. I think at a competition with my work partner of, you know, oh, how many do you have on your legs? We each had over 120 mosquito bites on our legs. And instead of walking, you would dance. You just danced to get those bugs off of you. But the village, there were three villages total for the summer. And the village that we visited second was Ruby, Alaska, and it was on the Yukon River, and it was a mining town. And so in that town, we didn't encounter a population of just subsistence-based natives. There was a melting pot of Caucasian miners and natives, and it was a rougher town. I can tell you that right from the beginning, there wasn't the warmth, the love, the reception. The kids threw frogs in the fire. I remember just being like, I was young, and I just remember kind of screaming and being like, we are not going to come swim with you if you keep throwing frogs in the fire. Like, what can I do to save these frogs, right? Yeah, so that was striking to me. The mix of cultures was striking to me.
And did any adults ask you to teach them to swim?
No. What a question. They didn't. They helped boat us. There was a safer swimming place, so they would boat us and the children to a place on the river that was best suited. But no, they did not. They did not. They would drop us off and go back.
So you taught the children to swim in the Yukon River?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. Yes, and my partner and I actually wanted to swim the Yukon River because wouldn't that be fun to go home and say you swam across the Yukon River?
Right.
And we tried doing so. And these gentlemen in the village said, oh, yes, we'll come boat and pick you up when you cross. And we started, and my gosh, the middle of a river is very fast. And we got out towards the middle, and we just looked at each other, and we're like, this is crazy. So we went back. And I remember the gentleman saying, whenever we've seen somebody cross, they usually end up 2 miles downstream on the other side.
Right.
And we're like, oh, we don't need to do that. Yeah.
Were you aware of who the shaman was in the village?
Not at all. I actually wonder if they're, you know, in the third village that I haven't spoken of yet, what was that? Nunwalloc? Koyukuk. Koyukuk, Alaska. There were some parents who wanted us to learn like how to make dream catchers or how to do something from their tradition, whether it was baskets. Yeah, we learned how to make baskets. That was magic. And there were others who were very, very shy, very protected. Like, no. You know, I remember one mother saying, oh, you know, so-and-so, you should teach them how to how to do whatever. And she was like, no, that's not going out of me to them. So there was definitely that awareness of outsider. Mm-hmm. But no, at that age, I wasn't aware of any shamanic leader or anything like that.
Mm-mm. What did you notice about the women?
Well, the women reminded me of my grandmother. Back to my grandmother. You know, they were the feeding. They fed. That's what I remember of them.
They were the nurturers.
Yes, definitely. There's a certain quality to a woman who's willing and able and unquestionably doing that. And they had that quality. Yeah.
And what did you observe of the men?
The men were hard workers. They were out, you know, they were fishing all the time for salmon for the season. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's their busiest time of year.
Mm-hmm. They were land. They were very oriented to the land and the work of being on the land and hunting. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I actually had a friend in this program who was in, you know, she was touring other villages. We would write to each other because we had a nice training session that bonded everybody. And she was actually proposed to by a man with a moose. And that was her life. She took it on. She was like, yes.
She accepted the proposal and...
The proposal, the man, and the life.
And stayed in Alaska.
Yeah. It was...
Wow.
It was perfect for her. Yeah.
And was she gifted a moose?
Yes, that was her...
That was the...
That was the proposal itself, yeah.
Instead of a ring, she got a moose.
Yes, I can provide for you. It's the same message.
Sure.
Uh-huh, in a different culture. Yeah, I didn't see a lot of the women, but they remind me of the women that I lived around in New Mexico.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Any frightening experiences for you up there?
On a humorous level, I think you could be proposed to at any moment by anyone. For no reason at all. You haven't even met them. There's so many men in Alaska.
They're hungry for women.
Yes. But truly frightening? No. I mean, the village of Ruby was, we just knew to tuck in, you know, in the evening because it just felt like a less safe culture. But no, nothing was frightening at all.
What was the most fun experience?
I don't know if I think that way.
Beautiful? Sensuous?
Oh, it was beautiful. It was the solitude when I wasn't working with children and to see all that wildness was probably the most amazing experience for me.
Had you ever been in solitude like that?
I had it just felt more familiar, though. You know, it felt more ordinary. Alaska still had, in that time, in my opinion, a wildness to it that was beyond what I had experienced here in Colorado or in the States down here. There's a deeper sense of beginning, of the source. Yeah.
Well, and the solitude is big. It's enormous because Alaska's so big.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can feel that. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Michelle.
Thank you.
You've been listening to KDNK in a conversation with Michelle Zanotti about her experience teaching swimming in three Alaskan villages in what year?
Oh, gosh. I think it was like 93.
1993.
She's old.
This is KDNK. Thank you for listening.